Welcome to the Kanji Cast, the podcast that you never made a deal with. We're also the show that didn't make the Kessel run in 12 parsecs, even if you round down, but we do provide an Asian perspective into the galaxy far, far away. I'm your host, Bria, and with me are my co-hosts, Brian and Jay.
Hello.
Hello.
On today's bonus episode. Yes, that's right, bonus episode. We're talking about the crazy exciting week that Asian Americans just had, so sit back and enjoy the Kanji Cast. And hi, everyone. Welcome to the bonus episode we decided we're doing about 3 minutes ago, because there's a lot that happened.
Holy crap. That was an eventful couple of days.
Yeah, I don't think any of us really expected it. Like, obviously, we knew Crazy Rich Asians was coming out, but I don't think anyone could have foreseen Kelly Marie Tran's op-ed for the New York Times. And then To All the Boys I Loved Before is on Netflix. So, yeah, we're going to talk about it a little bit. Welcome to the rom-com edition of Kanji Cast.
Okay, that is not a thing I ever thought we'd be doing, but hey, here we are.
I'm surprised it took us this long.
Really? When did you expect us to be doing the rom-com episode, Jay?
I don't know. It was just inevitable at some point with all of us. I just figured it would happen.
I'm glad you did, because I... Anyways, all right. So basically, this is a super long extended, and then there's this segment. Because like I said, we've got a lot to talk about. So let's start with the big blockbuster. Crazy Rich Asians came out Wednesday. So this is probably a week ago, if you're listening to it on Wednesday. It had a 35.3 five-day opening, of which 26.5 were from the weekend. And those are some crazy good numbers for a rom-com.
Yeah, those are stellar rom-com numbers. And I don't know if there's been a rom-com that's done something like that in years.
I think I was reading something like 3 to 5 years at least since someone, a rom-com broke 20 million on opening weekend. So,
yeah, that sounds right.
Wow.
I think. And actually, I remember looking Sunday morning and seeing the numbers were going to be, they're expecting a 34 million opening weekend. And then they hit 35.3 and everyone was just going, holy shit. So, yeah. So I've seen it. And Jay, you've seen it, right?
Yep.
What did you think about it?
I thought it was great. I mean, I like telling people that it has the basic skeleton of a standard rom-com, but there are so many different layers to the movie, and ones that, you know, I could appreciate some of them, a couple of the layers, but then I could tell there were scenes that went much deeper that I would not be able to understand unless I was maybe part of the audience being represented. And I thought that was really wonderful.
Yeah, because we talked about the Mahjong scene, which I know I'm pronouncing that wrong. My grandmother would smack me if she heard me say that. But because we talked about that after you saw it, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I made some basic observation about how, you know, oh, I like that it matched the theme of game theory in that movie. But then, Bria, you sent me this article where someone was really explaining the rules of Mahjong and then how it related to the different character motivations. And I don't think we're not going to spoilers on this, right?
No, because Brian hasn't seen it yet.
Yeah, but you know, there's all this cultural stuff that tied into the actual gameplay rules that I would have never appreciated. But the scene I couldn't imagine what it would be like for someone who like really understood that scene watching it and having that process unfold in front of them.
Yeah, it was crazy for me. And I only remembered about the basics of what was going on. I definitely didn't catch on to like some of the crazy number related parts to that. But yeah, no, I'm glad I was able to send you that article and that I had found that article earlier that day. Brian, I know you haven't seen it, but how excited are you to go see it when you get a chance?
I am really excited. I'm super bummed that I have been so freaking busy lately. There's just been zero opportunity for me to go see a movie, and there probably won't be until after Dragon Con.
I mean, we can always go on... Oh, wait, no, we have to play a game Thursday night. Never mind. There goes that plan.
Yep. Too busy, unfortunately.
Do you have, based upon the trailers and what you've heard, is there something in particular that you think you're looking forward to in the movie?
You know what? I've actually been putting my blinders up on this one quite a bit. I want to go in as sort of blank slate as possible. So I haven't actively been seeking out stuff for it.
Okay. Well, good news. Michelle Yeoh is amazing.
Yay!
Because she's, you know, a legend. So I'd say I really enjoyed it. I went to go see it Thursday of last week because I was trying to wait until Friday because I had things I was supposed to be doing. And then I was like, nope, I'm going to go watch this movie. And then I teared up in the theater multiple times. There's a scene where the family is making dumplings and I just got super emotional because I was like, oh, this is like my mom teaching me how to make wontons when I was a kid. And also, Gemma Chan is amazing. I am now her new biggest fan. She plays the male lead. She plays his cousin, Astrid. She's perfect and amazing and wonderful. And if anyone has seen the movie and they know me, they will understand why she's my favorite. I did want to talk about some of the controversies that have kind of popped up around it. And the first one actually happened way back before the movie came out. And it had to do with the casting of Henry Golding, who is half Asian and half British. So he's Hapa like me. And some people were kind of annoyed that they didn't cast an entirely Asian person to play him. So I want to get your guys' thoughts on that, especially you, Brian.
These conversations bother me a lot, just because there are so many people trying to erase biracial people from multiple directions. So I'm really not cool with controversy around casting a half Asian actor to play in a film. Because it's like some weird purity test that I'm not overly comfortable with.
I'm just glad that he's not Scarlett Johansson.
So say we all.
Thank God.
Did you guys actually hear the author, Kevin Kwan? He sold the book rights or the movie rights to the book for $1 with the understanding that like whoever bought it would not whitewash it.
Oh, that. God bless him.
Yeah, it was crazy because apparently they wanted to make Rachel white. And it's very important to the story's backbone that she's American born Chinese.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. I remember reading that originally Netflix had made an offer for it and then they declined in order to go for wide release. And I'm really, really glad they did because as important a venue as Netflix is for, you know, exposing different types of projects that don't normally get studio backing, the fact that Crazy Rich Asians is doing this well in theaters and is getting this kind of word of mouth is absolutely incredible. And I'm glad they took the chance.
Absolutely agreed. And then going back to Henry Golding for a minute, I'm going to try and do this without spoiling any of the movie, but kind of like what Brian said before, I think, you know, the whole purity test thing, I've always thought it's been interesting when you see people say, oh, he's not Asian enough. He doesn't look Asian enough. And then I look in the mirror and go, oh, huh. So what do y'all think of me then? Because I guess even though I'm literally half Chinese, guess that doesn't count. So to me, both the meta outside of the story and then what's said within the film about being from Asia, born and raised there, or being Asian or Chinese and raised in the United States, it says some very interesting things about that and the cultural nuance behind it. However, there was a Washington Post article about how Crazy Rich Asians does not represent all of the Asian experience. Who wants to take this one?
You know what? I, for one, am furious that an Adam Sandler film does not capture the white experience in its entirety.
It's a shame. It really should.
Just did anybody read that headline and go, eh, maybe we shouldn't run with that? Anybody? No.
No.
it's just what a crazy burden we put on films that are maybe the first of their kind to be the standard bearer and to be all things for all people when it's the first time anyone has gotten a chance to make anything, period.
Well,
exactly.
I mean, I guess we know what this all means. Hollywood's just going to have to produce a bunch more all Asian cast films so we can get that whole representation that this film had the audacity not to get in one go.
Yeah. And I mean, and I will say, obviously, it does not represent all Asian. It does not represent all of Singapore. And that is something I know people have said about the film, about how it doesn't represent how Singapore is more diverse than you see on the screen. However, when a film is called Crazy Rich Asians, I don't necessarily expect it to showcase the entirety of life. Like, if it was called Crazy Rich British People, I wouldn't expect to see the dock workers from whatever town to be represented in there in England. I don't know. It drives me crazy that I feel like this film keeps coming under so much controversy and so much scrutiny because it's not everything. And I don't think that's fair.
I mean, at the same time, it gets, you know, people say, oh, it's just a standard rom-com. But then on the other hand, it has to have all these higher expectations that a standard rom-com wouldn't have. And sure, it's a bit of a fantasy imagining of a certain class of people doing a certain kind of story, but that is the story they're setting out to tell. And I don't think they're making any claims to represent all Asians, all Chinese people, all Chinese Americans, all Singaporeans, all people from the Malaysian island. They're not trying to do that.
Yeah, that would be like saying Black Panther had to represent all Black people everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, a film cannot do that. There is no way for a film to do that.
Yep. Even when we talk about the good things, it ends up being one of those things where we just go, come on, guys, why are you doing this to us?
Just let us have this, please.
They don't want to let us have this. But I need to go see this movie again, actually. I think I want to go maybe Friday or maybe Sunday to see it again because it was just so good. It made me happy. Oh, the soundtrack is amazing. The one thing I wanted to bring up is there's a critical part of the movie towards the end where they play a cover of Coldplay's Yellow. And apparently the director published it, this very heartfelt letter to Coldplay asking to please use the song in the film because they originally said no about, you know, reclaiming it because shocking, Yellow, not a word that tends to go over well in the community.
No.
However, the cover they did, it's this 19-year-old girl named Catherine Ho. It's so beautiful and amazing. Like, even if you haven't seen the film or you're not planning on seeing the film, even though you should, please go look it up on YouTube. It's just, it's gorgeous. And it's done in, I think it's Mandarin. I will admit to not knowing the difference between Mandarin and Cantonese. I'm such a terrible Chinese girl. But yeah, please go listen to it. Yeah. Anything else you guys wanted to say about that film before we go on to the next one?
I promise I will get out to the theater as soon as I can. I just need people to stop moving here and for cons to stop happening at the same time.
I just have to say it's a genuinely good film that you should go see.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent. So on to the other Asian-led film that came out this weekend. To All the Boys I Loved Before is based on a novel by Jenny Han. It's currently on Netflix, which means you can finish this episode and then go turn it on right now. And it is the cutest teenage high school rom-com I've seen in a very long time. It's about this girl named Laura Jean, and she's got an older sister, younger sister, and they are mixed race. So her mother was Korean, her dad's white. And she always... The whole premise is that when she gets these very, very intense crushes, she'll write a note or write a letter to them and then put it in a box. And she doesn't send the box, but she just holds on to them. which is great until someone finds them and mails them out. So that goes about how you'd expect. And also, there is fake dating.
Oh, it's one of my favorite fan fiction tropes.
Brian, you're going to love this movie so much, I swear.
Yay.
Jay, did you get a chance to see this one yet?
No, but I am actually very much planning to ever since I heard about it on Twitter.
Good. Okay, so the two things I want to talk about this. Number one, it's adorable. And number two, so Jenny Han, apparently she sold it to the one production company that promised to not make Lara Jean white. One out of like a bunch of production companies said they would keep her Asian American. And that is one owned by Will Smith, apparently.
Good Lord.
Yeah. So it's been very fascinating for me reading a lot of the coverage that's been coming out about both of these movies and seeing how low the bar is to get to find a decent production company. And then the other thing people have been talking about is, well, why doesn't Lara Jean have an Asian love interest? Because the two guys she's between are white boys. To which I would like to say, as a mixed race girl who grew up in a predominantly white area and only knew one other East Asian boy growing up, and he was 2 years older than me, no, duh, she's going to crush on a white boy. Like, I just, it bothers me because this is like the first time I can actually remember seeing a high school rom-com with an Asian lead. But it's not good enough. Like, we're not doing, they're not doing enough. And I think that's not fair.
Yeah. And with this particular subject, I have seen some films where the protagonist will kind of punch down at other women of color around him and put white women on the pedestal. It doesn't sound like that's what this movie is doing, though.
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay, totally so not. I could sort of get criticism on the first example. I don't get it at all for this film.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like I said, there's not that many. To be honest, like the film, aside from her sisters, it's fairly white. I think actually the guy who plays Peter, I want to say he's Hispanic, but I would need to fact check that. And then one of the boys she sends a letter to is black. But again, I guess it bothers me because people seem to think that it has to be all or nothing. And it doesn't take the whole, if you grew up in a white area, that's also a very valid experience to have.
Yeah, totally. And, It's all about context. If this film isn't punching down, then I am really just not cool with that bit of criticism.
Yep. And there are go ahead, Jay.
It's honestly kind of distressing to me because it's the kind of thing that people get in real life sometimes too, where if they're in a community where there aren't many Asian people, or even if there are and people choose differently, they get a lot of similar discussions from their family where they carry a burden, an expectation that's sort of unreasonable. And I feel like the film and the criticism it's getting is similarly unreasonable and sort of unfair too.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's a really good point. Oh, so apparently the books are a trilogy, by the way. So if this does well on Netflix, maybe they will make the next two.
So everybody go watch it.
I was just watching it for a second time before the podcast started. I have no shame.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And it's cute. It'll make you happy. And it'll...
And we all need a lot of that.
Yes. Especially in light of the next topic, which... on the one hand, it's somewhat encouraging and somewhat uplifting. However, it never should have had to happen. So, short version, why we're doing this. Unless you were hiding under a rock, you probably read Kelly Marie Tran's op-ed for the New York Times, where she spoke out about the harassment that she received. Well, that's how they title it, as she speaks out about the harassment that she received after The Last Jedi for the first time. But it's really a much deeper dive into her experience as a woman and as an Asian woman of color, and how people, the white is held up as the standard. And if you don't meet it, how you can sometimes internalize that. And I'm not doing a good job explaining this. Can one of you guys do it? Because I'm starting to get choked up.
Sure. She was writing about her family and her parents and their experiences growing up and how they had to erase their identity and develop a new white slash American identity, and how growing up she felt the same pressure to conform to everyone else, and how that ended up impacting her own career as well, and how she was, so, you know, for her family life and everything she experienced growing up kept continuing into her movie career, where she was expected to be a sidekick in someone else's story, and she would never be the type of person who would be the hero or the lead or the love interest, and how everything from her treatment online because of The Last Jedi and just her career in general and her style growing up all had to do with the same treatment and centering of white as default.
That is a much better explanation than I was doing. And then it ended, the very last line, I'm going to paraphrase because I don't have the article open, but she said something along the lines of how her real name is, and this is how Twitter told me it's pronounced, is Luan.
The on part is pronounced really fast, so I believe it's something along the lines of Lon.
There we go. My Vietnamese is worse than my Mandarin. What were your guys' reactions to that? Because I don't think any of us saw this op-ed coming in a million years.
Well, I was reading it at work and trying not to cry, so that was great.
Seconded.
But it's I relate to this experience on a depressing level. I mean, I don't know if my experience growing up was nearly the same, but I can think of times growing up where I felt embarrassed about my Cambodian background. Where I'd have to, I didn't want to tell friends I couldn't go and do something because we were doing a thing with my mom's side of the family, which had a lot of Cambodian culture in it, and I didn't want to explain anything because I was afraid they'd think it was weird. I mean, that's just, it's a sort of centering whiteness thing that this op-ed talks about. And heck, I never learned how to speak Cambodian because I guess there was a part of me growing up that thought that it didn't have as much value as other things I could be working on. And it, looking back at it now, it's sad. I see a lot of the same things that she grew up with.
Yeah, it was something that struck very close to home. The idea of changing who you are, not to be embarrassed by other people and to fit in, like to the point of changing the way I would pronounce things or making sure I would deliberately not understand the language and not eat ethnic cuisine at school and my lunches and all these things that were, you know, it's a constant thing growing up, and we've all been kids. Look, we know how kids tease each other and are merciless by default anyway. And so the whole added experience of the cultural alienation is really strong, and it has a lifelong impact. And I'm glad that she said something about it, because I don't think I ever really talked about it much myself. And I'm glad someone with her platform brought it out there.
Yeah, I mean, I know I've never talked about this before to any extent, and it's really the first time I can recall ever seeing these familiar feelings and thoughts just put into words on paper for me to read and identify with.
Yeah, so like, I'm in the same boat as you guys, is that, I mean, my mom's side of the family, we're kind of in a weird position because my grandmother's family from a generation or so before her immigrated from China to Hawaii. And so we have this kind of strange Chinese Hawaiian fusion culture that I have on that side of the family. But I never learned Mandarin as a child either, except for a couple words here and there. And that wasn't because my mother didn't want to teach me or because I was trying not to learn. It was because my mother and her siblings never learned, because there was a pressure to assimilate and to become or to be American. Even though my mom was born and raised in New York, it's still, and you know, a generation past that, it was still that very strong pressure. And the other thing that kind of struck home for me was, and it seemed interesting, the reactions on Twitter today to people who somewhat seemed surprised by the fact that Kelly has another name.
Oh my God, that might have been the least surprising thing of the article, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I mean, I have a Chinese name as well as my given name. It's my middle name. And it's how my grandmother chose to respect that. Our heritage is her, all of her kids and all of her grandchildren all have Chinese names as well. But I just remember I would never tell anyone about it as I was a kid because people would always laugh. And honestly, it's not even that strange of a, or I don't think it's a strange sounding name, but people would poke fun at it because as a kid, I looked, just to put it bluntly, I looked a hell of a lot more Chinese than I do now. If anyone ever sees any pictures of me as a small child, I looked full on Asian, only vaguely Italian. And now it's kind of vice versa. But again, like, it's a similar thing to what Brian said. You know, you kind of, you have to, you sort of hide that side of yourself. And it's sad because in a way it almost feels like I've kind of lost out on some of that part of my culture. I mean, background.
I've got a ton of regret over not embracing that part of me growing up. And it's worse now because I live on the other side of the country from my family. So I have even less of a chance to absorb that culture than I used to. And it, a part of me feels like I wasted a great opportunity because I was worried that I'd be made fun of.
Yeah, and there's like a limited opportunity to absorb this stuff. Like, you can do it as an adult, but it's not the same as being immersed to it when you're young and sort of living it, because I have like cousins and relatives who certainly did and who are easily, you know, they're as American as can be, but they also have that side of them that relates easily and can, you know, transition back and forth. And I don't have that ability. If I ever went to India, I mean, I've been there, but if I ever went myself, like without my family, I would be completely lost and confused. I wouldn't know what I was doing. And that's really, really regrettable.
Yeah. And Jay, you're kind of in a different position than both me and Brian too, since we're both mixed. And I have a question there. I just can't find it.
Well, I mean, it is interesting because it, I had friends who were not necessarily mixed, some of them were, but like who were second generation or third generation versus first generation and that sort of thing. And it's never been clear to me whether first is the person who's immigrating or the first who's the first in America. But anyway, I had kids whose parents were immigrants and I had kids whose grandparents were immigrants, and their experiences were sort of night and day. And they, the ones whose grandparents were immigrants, felt like they had lost all their culture. But I felt like I've lost it already just one generation through. And it's really sad and strange because you feel you don't feel entirely American. You don't feel like you grew up in the default American culture, but then you don't have that connection to your home culture either, or your ancestral culture. So you're sort of in the middle, in a limbo. Maybe that's why I attach to ancient Rome so much.
Just go straight for the emperors.
Exactly.
Wow.
Oh boy. This is a heavy topic, guys.
Yeah, that. I mean, I knew we were in for a heavy discussion, but that got a lot deeper and heavier than even I was expecting.
Yeah. To, I guess, steer things away from us and hopefully slightly lighter. So a lot of the reactions, we all hecked up and we all read the comments, right?
Oh, yeah, I totally read the comments, and I spent all day heavily utilizing the block button on Twitter.
But Ryan, I just need you to know, I didn't like The Last Jedi, and I think Rose is garbage. But...
All right, I'm going to use our one available F-bomb right now.
Go for it.
If you responded to that piece with a deflective tactic that it's not about Kelly Marie Tran, it's about Rose, we're not criticizing her, we're criticizing Rose, fuck off. Stop making this shit about you. Stop trying to deflect and try to sweep all of this abusive behavior under the rug. You're not helping.
Nope. Don't do it. You're a jerk. But on the other hand, I will say that something that did mean a lot to me was seeing a lot of, a lot of fellow Asians talking about how they could also relate to Kelly Marie Tran's experience. And just as a side note, I'm continuing to use Kelly Marie Tran because that's how she published the op-ed. And she has not made it clear what she chooses to use professionally. And I don't feel like I have a right to use her Vietnamese name at this point.
Same.
Yeah. I thought it was very, very heartening to see a lot of other Asians talking about their experiences and how they related. And it's all really between that and then To All the Boys and Crazy Rich Asians. It's turned into a very therapeutic experience, I think, for the Asian American community on Twitter over the last week. And I did not see that coming.
I am very much here for it, though. It's been like we've been having group therapy online, and I'm happy.
Very. Anything? Oh, there's a question, by the way. I forgot. We had a question from our Patreon Slack from John, who wants to know, given Kelly's op-ed, what do you hope will happen in regards to representation post episode 9? And what do you think will happen?
Oh, hopes. I have all sorts of hopes. What do I think will happen? We could go from very happy to very sad here in short order.
Yeah. I'm being hopeful that it's going to continue to get better, given that Christopher Sean is the lead in Star Wars Resistance, and he's also Hoppe. I think we'll certainly continue to see people of color cast in lead roles, but given the fact that we don't know what movie comes next, it's hard, or what it's about, it's hard to say what I think will happen. I mean, call me an optimist, which almost no one has ever done in my life. But I want to hope and I want to believe that Lucasfilm will continue to cast their films diversely.
Yeah, I think so. And even going back to Force Awakens, it ended up having a more diverse cast than we expected, even with a default number of legacy characters being involved. And I hope going forward with more original projects and with larger trends in cinema in general and the demand to have diversity in front and behind the camera, that it gets better moving forward. And all I can hope is that it gets better, because it's sort of very depressing to think the opposite.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the episode 9 casting, though, I mean, I can't help but feel good about that.
Yeah, it's definitely been incremental improvements each time, I appreciate.
I mean, out of the main crew, there's going to be two black guys, a black woman who is new to the cast, an Asian American woman, a Hispanic man. Am I missing anything? I'm doing that off the top of my head. Off the top of my head. There we go. English. I mean, Poe, Lando, Finn, Rose, the character whose name we don't know, or the actress whose name I'm also blanking on because I'm horrible.
I think that's it right now.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Oh, same.
I love that we keep, you know, the whoever does the casting, they keep increasing the diversity and they don't take away from the diversity. Yeah, that's what I got. Anyone else?
I'm hopeful. There's definitely strides I'd love to see them make in LGBT representation. I hope that they're ignoring the vocal minority of people led by grifters that aren't really here for Star Wars. They're here to we'll call it quote unquote economic anxiety. I hope Lucasfilm ignores them. I hopefully will, and I can't wait to see what they do next.
Okay. I think that's most everything we have for the bonus episode. So I guess just any last thoughts on this crazy exciting week we've had? I am doubling down and owning that that pun.
Kelly Marie is our queen. Praise be to Kelly.
If you listen to this episode and you wonder what the heck we're talking about, we have some homework for you. Read Kelly Marie Tran's article and watch Crazy Rich Asians, and then watch, or in vice versa order, watch To All the Boys I've Loved Before. Get to it.
Yes.
I'll expect a paper on her desk next month.
Yes, Brian. I'm waiting on that paper.
I will. As soon as I have time to watch movies, I will.
I'm sorry. Sort of. Only thing I have to say is that Constance Wu, actually, everyone in Crazy Rich Asians should just come be in a Star Wars. I feel very strongly about that. Like, just bring them all into the Star Wars universe and I'll be happy. And in the meantime, this has been a hell of a week. And this is going to be a good experience to remember. Like I said, like, I'm not happy about why Kelly had to write her op-ed, but it was, that girl is strong as hell and I love and support her even though I don't know her.
Damn right.
And yeah, okay. So I think that brings us to the end of this bonus episode. Are we doing outro stuff, Brian? We didn't actually talk about this.
TashiStation.net. You know where to find us on Twitter. Just go those places. Bye, everyone.